Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ian Thompson, our editor at large. Last time we recorded, it was the middle of the night in Cannes. Now it's a slightly saner Friday afternoon, and I'm back in New York, and Ann's in Los Angeles. We're gradually acclimating to some semblance of normalcy. Ann, how are you holding up?
I'm a little bit losing steam. I got up at like 7 a.m. with David Ehrlich, and we left and took an Uber to the Nice airport, and we each flew to Paris, and then we lost each other, and he went off to some other connection, and I ended up on an 11-hour flight. And as we were landing, and I didn't get much sleep on the flight because it was all day. It was a day long thing. You're just heading into the daylight the whole time. And I ended up saying to the woman next to me, "Oh, I'm just going to go to bed as soon as I get home." And she says, "Then you're going to get up at 3 a.m. And I went, "No, I'm so tired.
How ominous.
That's not going to happen."
I hate how people predict that. I always try to trick myself. I pulled an all-nighter. I left the day before you guys, and I pulled an all-nighter, so I passed out on my flight. And then I woke up and was still super disoriented, but I was like basically trying to block it out as long as possible. So the last few days I've been in this sort of manic mode where I'm like sort of in denial about the fact that I traversed the globe and stayed in can mode by basically continuing to watch movies, following the buzz, texting with people who are in, you know, a totally different time zone, realizing sometimes they're out partying because it's like evening for me and I'm getting texted back from people. But that's sort of the insanity of it, is that we were swept up in this crazy can experience. And what's been so, I think, gratifying about it is that the movies have really delivered. I mean, I took a year off, but
you were generally a little more positive than I was.
I thought it was a really good year.
So I'm there, right? And I'm reading your reviews of the movies I'm seeing, and you had seen a lot of them ahead of time. So sometimes you were
some
like
of the bigger
body
ones, yeah,
dying around while I was rushing to see the movie.
It's all
French
strategy
Dispatch or whatever. But people should not think that you write those reviews, you know, in 2 minutes, because you don't. But
some of them are 2 minute reviews, and some of them are 2 week reviews. It all depends on how things work out on the ground.
But the ones that I really couldn't understand why you gave French Dispatch such a gentle, kind, and loving review, because I was so bored, Eric. I just sat there. There was one, you know, it's the danger of the anthology film is that it doesn't grab you with some a compelling narrative unless the people involved are very, very clever. So Wes Anderson has these incredible actors and these delightful sets and these amazing camera shots and these amazing moves through space and everything. It's all very elaborate and expensive, and yet you're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, everything you just described is why I was never bored by this movie. In fact, I found that everything about it that was satisfying was pure distilled Wes Anderson, whatever you want to call it, whimsy, the kind of ironic tone, right? It was a very fun movie, but I also thought it was a very complex assemblage of little stories. These vignettes of sorts, these little New Yorker-ish stories, are all very different from each other, and I found them all very gratifying in their own kind of way. I didn't need the kind of broader narrative arc for them to sink in, and I thought that there was something almost kind of new wavy about the kind of experimentation he was doing here. I mean, this is a filmmaker who is so confident now with his mode of storytelling that he doesn't necessarily need to be telling the same story for 2 hours. And I thought there was something very liberating about that, as well as the ensemble that he's assembled. Now, it isn't as overall satisfying as Grand Budapest Hotel, which is probably his most sophisticated work.
Absolutely.
But I think in small doses, it's a very satisfying piece.
So Budapest Hotel got like 9 Oscar nominations and 4 wins, and they were all in the craft category. So this is sublimely executed. I mean, there's no question that it's gorgeous. So I think that you could see, you know, Alexandre Desplat repeat, or production design, or cinematography, or hair and makeup, that kind of thing. My favorite episode was the one with Benicio del Toro, who's on a roll because he was so delightful in the Steven Soderbergh movie that was at Tribeca as well.
And it's one of the many Léa Seydoux films at Cannes this year. She's pretty great.
There were
great
4 in this of them, sort of, and the poor woman
Four.
Was stuck in Paris because she got COVID. Here yeah. we all are testing every 2
Apparently
days.
She's fine, thankfully.
She
but
seems to be fine, but she missed the opportunity to go up the red carpet all 4 times, you know.
Well, I feel her pain only in that I have no spit left to give, because we've been, it feels like a distant memory as soon as you're out of it, but we've been tested so many times over the last couple of weeks. So it's no surprise that there were some aspects of Cannes that felt the impact of the weirdness that we've been all living through. But the films,
but
really,
we all had to figure it out. We had to keep the timing right. I mean, I had breakfast with Michael Barker of Sony Pictures Classics, who had Mothering Sunday, which I enjoyed, with Josh O'Connor, which is delightful. And then which I liked more than you and David did.
Yeah.
And then Eva Husson.
I was, no diss to, you know, some of the craft involved in this movie, but, you know, that one probably bored me a bit more than the French Dispatch. So it's a sliding scale.
I just dove into that sort of Downton Abbey-ish universe. But he had to go get a rapid test for because he had a meeting at the Palais, and then he had to get a PCR test because that was required in order for him to show up at the Danish Pavilion.
So oh God!
Everybody had to think in those terms.
Well, my ridiculous moment that I had was we had a lovely cocktail event on a rooftop, and that was from 6 to 8 p.m. and it was great to see all these American indie people who showed up for it. Sean Baker, like you said, Michael Barker and Michael Covino, who's the head of the Canterbury.
Ed Pressman
was there. Ted Hope was there, newly liberated from Amazon. I mean, he's been gone
Tom
for a
Quinn
while.
But from Neon
Tom
King.
Quinn. All the gang was all there.
Nicolette Eisenberg from 24.
Exactly. We had the full, so it was a great little evening. And then my
Matt
plan was to
Dentler.
Sort of, exactly. We did cover the full range. And then, so my evening plan was sort of like perfect, right? We have the 6 to 8 p.m. thing where everybody comes to us on this rooftop. And then I'm going to slide right into the Mia Hansen Love movie that was on the calendar for like 10:15 or 10:30, something like that. Well, turns out there was a 10:15 and a 10:30. I had my test had not gotten my test results in time to go to the 10:30 screening in the Palais, which happened to be the ticket I had requested. There was a 10:15 screening in the Debussy where I didn't actually need a test result. So I had those two. I didn't have a ticket. So all of a sudden I'm scrambling, texting all of these people about who can get me a ticket to these things. And then I realize, oh, I can just cancel my ticket to the one in the Palais and get a new ticket to the
did
other
you do
one.
That?
And I did it and I was fine. But by the time I did that, all these people were scrambling to get me tickets.
Oh no.
So that was a Cannes moment.
I kept having glitches with my app. I mean, it's sort of like halfway through the festival, magically the ticket that was supposed to show up at the bottom of the email, all of them showed up after they hadn't been there, and I had to scramble every time.
It was a juggling act, right?
The website to find it. But that was
a real Cannes moment for me too, because it was one of those things where I was like, somehow something, you know, I had the perfect plan and somehow something had to go crazy, and like I'm like rushing and all sweaty from the heat to go see a quiet 2-hour movie about a couple that traveled to Faroe
Island
to work through their problems.
Bergman Island is one of my favorite films. It's one of the ones that's at the top. of my list. I think it, and I think
Mia Hansen Love, man, what a remarkably subtle and intricate filmmaker when it comes to the details of relationship. You're drawn into this idea, this meta movie of two filmmakers who are telling their story while
she's mostly telling hers. He's not telling his. Tim Roth.
Well, he's trying to write a movie too, right? We
so
just
there's
don't
two
see
movies
it.
That go together or here. It's sort of interesting. Yeah. Bergman's Island is very, it's sort of auto-fictional in the sense that she, Mia Hansen-Love, was married to Olivier Assayas, and he was older and more, quote-unquote, lauded and accomplished, you know, and experienced.
Right.
And so she was in a sort of catch-up mode, which is what this movie's about. It's about the same thing.
Yeah.
And
it's very explicitly
so
based
confident,
on that.
It all seems so easy for him, and she's struggling. And then we see her version of the story that she's telling with Mia Wasikowska and this guy,
Anders Danielsen Lee,
who's also in The Worst Person in the World, The Walking Trier, which is also about a woman who's involved in a relationship with a guy who's more accomplished than her.
A lot of
plays.
Yeah, a lot of meta movies. There's also Souvenir Part 2, which is the continuation of Joanna Hogg's story, which is also turns into itself in a way. It turns back on itself and becomes a movie about a movie. So there's something in there, obviously, about that. And that can get a little navel-gazy in the wrong hands, but these are all actually really strong film.
I look forward to catching up. So what's going to happen is, you know, I saw a lot of movies. You saw a lot of movies. Well, you're catching up. I'm catching up. I have some links, but we can also have the luxury. We are very lucky people to go to Telluride. Oh, by the way, I had to get my vaccination form in to Telluride too.
Yes. There will be no spitting in the mountains of Colorado.
No,
Telluride's basically just like prove that you're vaccinated.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
So we need to get PCR tests to get back into the country, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And as we show our vaccine proof, we will be probably also very knowledgeable about a lot of films that we saw at Cannes that will be back in the conversation, because it does seem likely. I mean, the Oscar conversation is one piece of it, but it does seem likely that a lot of these films are going to continue to have a life on the festival circuit, because
absolutely,
as I said, it was a very strong year. And I think from, you know, the films that we've talked about to some of the others that we should, these are films that I think, you know, the fall festivals are going to want to bring back into the conversation. Like, for example, Red Rocket, right?
Before Sean we get Baker's to that, though, movie. I just want to say The Walking Trier did get picked up finally by Neon.
Oh, by Neon.
It was kind of a weird thing that it hadn't been picked up yet.
It's a good point. So Neon ended up with like three movies in competition, just like IFC. And then, so A24 has Red Rocket. Now, this was Sean Baker's first film in competition, and it's an incredibly strong movie. I think every one of his, I mean, I've seen all of Sean Baker's films. If you go back to Takeout, each film he's made has built on the next one in a very specific way.
He's solid. And I love what he did really here. He took 16 millimeter film and he took it to the ugliest city in Texas.
Quote unquote, Texas City.
Unbelievable. And he made it beautiful in his own way. It's a donut shop, but there are these iconic shots of this sort of hideous landscape and this porn star, Simon Rex, who we do get to see running naked at one point to establish.
I think his name in the movie his porn name is Mikey Saber XXX.
Correct.
Or something.
Correct.
Like that, right?
Correct.
So that's going to be a thing that people will remember. I mean, it's fascinating because it definitely is not a character you're rooting for, but I think what's exceptional about the way the movie unfolds is that you're so drawn into his dilemma. Obviously, people will say, well, it's like the guy in Uncut Gems, right? But I actually think this movie...
isn't as noisy as that.
It's not. And in some ways, you don't realize quite how awful this guy, like Uncut Gems, it was all out there from the get-go that this guy was pretty bad. But this one,
no, you're rooting for him to become his best self while you watch him become his worst
completely
self.
Completely ruined.
Right in front of your eyes.
Yeah. And I think when Baker did the press
conference. His careerism and narcissism trumps, as it were, whatever potential he might have.
Because it's set in 2016 and there is some Trumpy stuff there, but it's not a political film in an overt sense either. I mean, it really is very specifically a character study about someone who is sort of, you know, almost like doomed to fail no matter what he does. But I also, it was interesting, Baker in the press conference was saying, you know, I think I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this one. I think you can actually trust people, even in today's very charged climate, to understand that depiction is not endorsement. And this is a movie that people will actually really appreciate because it walks that line so carefully. It's willing to go there. It's not just a canned phenomenon. So
one of the
we'll
things
see.
I loved about the way this was written is that this guy, he keeps boasting to this young girl about his porn career and talking about the adult film industry. And it's like you're talking to someone talking about Hollywood. It's the same thing where he's talking about the lingo and he's got all the details of the different awards he won and everything. But it's the adult film industry. And I just found that very amusing. He wants to get back.
Yeah,
he can't help himself. He has to discover this young girl and bring her back, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There's a recurring joke in the movie about how he won some prizes for best oral. And everyone's
and he's
what did you actually do
for it?
The I never really thought about that before. So, but there's a lot of kind of doomed anti-heroes or people who seem like they're well-meaning and then they make a slight decision that kind of screws things up.
Matt Damon in Stillwater,
another good one. Yeah,
and then
that
the
sense.
Hero, the guy in the hero is
Oscar Farhadi's
new thing. Hard to do the right thing and then they and redeem themselves and then they fuck up.
Yeah, so the Farhadi film is fascinating. That's an Amazon movie that came into the festival, obviously, with a lot of anticipation. We found out at the press dinner that we went to right before we recorded last week's episode that Farhadi was actually going to be on the Cannes jury last year. And then when he was invited for this one, it turned out that he would rather have a movie. And now we know why, because this is a very strong example of what he does best.
It was a huge contender for the Palme d'Or. We're
in the past.
This the day before. You know,
but the thing is, yeah, he's got a couple Oscars and stuff, so a Palme wouldn't be that surprising. But whatever happens there, I think
the Iranian submission for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and notably, he walks that line well, where he is not super critical of the government. This is a very personal story about a guy who seems to be doing the right thing and then ends up, it's almost like Capra-esque. He gets swept up into this very specific
Meet
set
John
of circumstances.
Doe is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that's certainly one that to watch, and just in terms of, you know, the kind of life it'll have in the fall season. But if there's one Cannes experience that we all have to admit was like the Cannes movie to write home about, it's not any of this stuff. Let's not kid ourselves. This was like everybody was excited about the Neon very smartly put out a very exciting trailer and like right before the festival, and you couldn't really tell what it was about. But even now, it's like kind of hard to tell people what it's about. A woman who is both sexually attracted to cars and poses as a young man to go undercover because she's a serial killer. And that's not a huge spoiler because a bunch of other stuff happens. But man, Julia Ducournau after Raw really followed up on the promise of that movie.
So
it's
she sets
wild.
Up this extraordinary, you know, exotic dancer who has a much more erotic relationship to a car. That's what makes her get off than anybody in real life. In fact, the people who approach her for sex, she kills, basically. And we're going along with that for a while. And then when there's this extraordinary pivot, she has to save herself and go undercover in this other identity. She's in this relationship with a father played by the great Vincent Lindon, who's a Belgian actor, amazing actor, perfectly cast.
Very different. Usually he does see
man.
We usually see him in these like Stefan Brisé's film Measure of a Man. I think he won Best Actor for that.
He won Best Actor
like
for that.
Sort of these social realist kind of things. And this movie is like totally bonkers.
He gets
it's
what he has
very
to
different
do.
Direction.
He's totally on.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, he's like injecting steroids into his ass and you know.
Yeah, but he's built up.
But this filmmaker knows exactly what she's doing. It's so well written. It's so well directed. It's so thoughtful about gender identity and politics and dynamics in a family. And you end up rooting for this character who clearly had not been loved at all. and was now experiencing real love for the first time, and what that was doing to her.
But it's
and
never
there's
explicit.
A whole other dimension that we're not even mentioning because you have to see the film.
Yeah, I mean, like the queerness of this movie is something that is fascinating to watch kind of unfold, because there's nothing stated explicit. You have to experience it in terms
that's
of
right.
what people look like and behave.
Yeah. Film. Yeah.
That's true cinema. And that's what was so exciting about it. And I can't wait to see what kind of a life
it's so
it,
unexpected.
It has
now you have been, I'm sorry, we're just going to have to get into this. You have been so, I'm sorry, I shouldn't do that. You have been so positive that Tatin had a shot at winning the Palme d'Or. We'll find out shortly if it wins.
It'll why
win
would
something.
I think that? So let's break it. Why would I think
would
it would win
that?
Something?
Because it's so improbable.
I don't think it's improbable. But I also
win a big prize like directing or screenplay.
I think that Cannes and awards and Oscar season are very similar to me, in that I sprinkle a certain level of analysis with wishful thinking, right? And some synthesis of that is what ends up on the surface. And I think, obviously, I think that would be wonderful for a movie like this to win the Palme d'Or. I also think that visionary, you can't discount a visionary film that takes a lot of bold creative risks as being something that a lot of people are excited about. Most people I talked to at Cannes were excited about this movie. It's not always the most obvious kind of accessible drama that takes the prize. I mean, weird stuff wins.
The jury. So you have to look at the jury and you have to figure out this year, there are more women on the jury. There are more,
yes.
It is a diverse jury. It is led by Spike Lee. That
filmmakers
means
and
that
actors.
A movie like Lingui, the from Africa, by Harkoon, or something
Haroon,
might do well, or La Fracture, or The Divide, which I hear Spike really liked.
Yeah, Spike really liked that, and he definitely really liked Lingui, the Sacred Bonds from Mohamed Saleh Haroon, and I thought that was Haroon's best film. I mean, I would say that there's,
he's
you know,
been bidding to become the new Simbeni of Africa for a long time.
I mean,
time.
Whatever film, well, and he's from Chad, and there are very few Chadian filmmakers whose work travels anyway. And this is probably his strongest film in a lot. I mean, I've only seen Haroon's films because of Cannes. I mean, I remember seeing Grigory's a few years ago and A Screaming Man, and these are very solid dramas. This one is his first to really focus on women, and it's got that the same sort of appeal and to some degree of 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, and that it's about someone who needs an abortion in a society that's sort of built to stop that from happening. But it's sort of a survival movie of sorts with this mother and daughter, and it's very emotionally involving. So something like that could
actors
certainly win as well.
To things
yeah,
like that.
I mean, I
that's what
look.
I'm trying to tell you. Every year I have the same argument with you. You didn't think that the Ken Loach.
That's every year you cite the
win.
Ken Loach thing because
no,
that was the one time.
No one thought Deepan would win. The
I did think Deepan would win because I was in the room when Deepan played.
Compelling.
Yeah, I mean, and Deepan was also a ambitious movie as well. I mean, it had this wild action sequence climax that nobody saw coming. So, it wasn't a totally square piece of dramatic storytelling. So that sometimes something like that can break through. I mean, Blue's Warmest Color was not a very, I mean, it took some creative risks as well. So stuff breaks through. I mean, and it's so arbitrary. I think we were talking about before, and David Lynch gave it to The Pianist. So that was not a very David Lynch-y movie. So it's really hard to say. But I honestly, at the end of the day, I'd be happy if any of those movies won, or if Drive My Car won, which is this
so the sad
really
story
compelling.
Of Cannes is that in order to go to that lovely rooftop party you were describing, I had to leave Drive My Car. It's a 3-hour movie. So I had gone about an hour and a half into it when I
did you like what you saw
it.
Because I feel an
I
hour and a half is just barely past the opening
it.
Credits I mean
I loved what I saw and I can't
the credits run like 40 where, minutes into that movie
this,
but
I know.
It's,
this is,
it's
this
an incredible piece of storytelling
it's a very very but that's a story by the way that the jury again another like Bergman Island it's another story that's very much about the world of filmmaking and writing and acting
production of Uncle Vanya
and they could the way he uses Uncle Vanya in the car is just amazing. And there's some class dynamics in that movie too. So
it's, yeah, I've been following that filmmaker for, I mean, the last time he had a movie in Cannes was Asuka 1 and 2. And I remember thinking like he's got that sort of Romarian ability to make dialogue really involving from a filmmaking standpoint, you know, in this case the device of the guy in the car listening to himself running lines on this material is a very effective way to kind of, it's not purely like you're not just watching a film play, there's something cinematic about it, but it's still using dialogue as a vehicle for the narrative. So very, very involving in that respect. So I mean, all of these movies are really strong. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think this was just a really good year. There, and as far as I can tell, there were not any really obvious turkeys. I mean, you might
I would
be
say that
Annette
was a turkey, although it turned, it was like leading.
That was a delicious leading, turkey from my
it
perspective.
Was leading the screen,
oh my gosh.
Grid for a lot of the time, and Benedetta did
God.
Very well on that.
Don't get me started on that screen grid. If you look at that screen grid, most
so
of the movies suck.
Base. It was
doesn't
so,
make
sense. I've never
they need
seen
to reassess
so
who's on that thing. And something
of
something didn't work
on.
Out there.
I
yeah.
couldn't agree more. Yeah. So basically, the two movies that were the most fun to talk about and were the most divisive, and that was Annette and Benedetta. I got in some great arguments on both of them.
Yeah, and, Benedetta. So you had fun. you had a fun back and forth with Paul Verhoeven about
that
movie.
Great.
82-year-old Paul Verhoeven is,
like
is ready
him.
To go down swinging if
yeah,
he must.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, Benedetta. I had fun watching Benedetta, but it is so silly. I mean, it is like a campy,
it's
Verhoeven
hard to take
movie.
It seriously. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, very hard.
But I enjoyed watching it as a Cannes experience.
I felt like both Carax and Verhoeven in some ways were out of touch with how their films would be perceived by audiences. That they were doing what they wanted to do, defiantly so, and they really didn't recognize how the films would play.
But Carax is fine.
Made me mad. The Carax, he did not get what the puppet was going to do. People can say they think the puppet was great, but it didn't work. And
I
there
thought
are
it was
ways,
funny.
There are many ways he could have made that work.
But the thing about Annette that I think is going to be fascinating is that movie will have a life on Amazon because of that Adam Driver factor. And some people will like
it
and some won't.
In it.
There's a lot to it that I think people can appreciate. Annette is not, it's not like, you know, you either love it or you hate it. It gets a lot of different sorts of reactions along that spectrum. And I think the music really delivers
well, part
too.
Part of it
so.
Has to do with the Sparks Brothers and whether or not you respond to their music.
You're
that
into
opening
that.
Number is fantastic. But, you know, the music starts getting repetitive after a while.
It's I enjoy
used
it.
To
I enjoy
carry
it quite
the narrative
a
of the movie in a way that it can't. It just doesn't accomplish it.
Well, speaking of riveting narratives, it's too bad you missed out on the new Apichatpong We Are Sothakwa film because that's a real laugh a moment experience.
Apichatpong We Are Sothakwa.
You've given it up. You've given up. This was going to be the year you would nail it each time.
We Are Sothakwa. I can do it.
That's pretty good. It's beautiful. It's very uncompromising. Tilda Swinton wandering the streets of Colombia, trying to figure out the source of this mysterious sound she keeps hearing that nobody else can hear. But it's another one of those sort of mesmerizing big screen experiences where, you know, if I didn't see it in that context, it just would have been a harder movie to get into. So I think one of the things that I really took out of being at Cannes this year is like, you really need this kind of festival element to make the case for the way that people create art for the big screen. I mean, there's just no other way to see it without that. I mean, these movies would not have worked if it was an online festival. It's just inconceivable. So that was a big part of it.
I have to say that this year there was this moment where I happened to be sitting right in the middle of I guess it was the Debus. No, it was the Grand Theatre Lumiere. It was the big theater, and it was a hero. It was the Farhadi, and that's a movie that is a compelling narrative, where you get very caught up in the characters and you get very caught up in what's going to happen next. It's very intricately designed and plotted and executed to perfection. And you felt the whole theater being held in the filmmaker's hands for the whole thing. And it mm-hmm. was riveting and magical. That's what we live for. You can't get that any other
that,
way.
That sort of collective experience that...
Because everyone's
all,
seeing it for
none
the
of us
first time.
Create.
Nobody's ever seen these films before.
Right. Right. Well, and even if it's a, even if the movie's not working in the audience, it's like this collective endeavor to try to get into it together that I always find fascinating.
Titane was great because I was checking out all the walkouts.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Who was there.
And that experience for that movie, that's going to be, that will follow that film wherever. It'll continue to have crazy reactions in theaters no matter where it plays. So,
but that was why I was arguing with you about the Palme d'Or. I mean, watch it win and I look like an asshole, but they even gave Crash a special jury prize. You know, they couldn't, you know, it the Palme d'Or is like the Oscar in a certain way. The jury could go and give it to something outrageous if they wanted to, but they can't, I don't think.
Well, it is a democratic process. Each juror gets one vote. So I guess whatever people see the headline say, just bear that in mind when you hear this. It was a collective decision. It's not like Spike is a dictator and he gets some extra influence or whatever. At the end of the day, they all get to vote.
He has a lot of sway.
I would be intimidated being at the table with him.
Coppola
but...
had a lot of sway in the year that they forced Crash not to win. You know,
I just love this idea. I wish we had more festivals where we get really excited about what are these filmmakers who are watching all these, you know, filmmakers and actors, whomever, watching all these movies along with us. Like, we're all going to the movies at the same time that they are.
And we're all in the same space. I mean, I got into an elevator at the Majestic and Maggie Gyllenhaal got in there with me. I said, "Hey, Maggie, how you doing?" We had a little conversation.
Well, and I think I mentioned this
before. And then we go on our merry way, you know.
I mentioned before, and Kleber Mendoza-Filho was my jury president for Cannes Critics Week a few years ago. And it's just funny because, I mean, I was talking to him about it, and it was like, it's not the same thing when you're watching like one movie a day from a first or second time filmmaker than when it is this jury experience. It's such a crazy, all-consuming thing. And like, if you accidentally gossip about something at a party, then suddenly everyone's like, "Oh, this is what the jury's arguing about right now." It's like, it generates news. And outside of maybe Spike and Maggie, most of these people are not used to that kind of intensity. So it really
She knew what she couldn't and what she
I'm sure she was very guarded around
say.
You, Anne.
Yeah, no, we were fine. But she asked me what I was liking. You know, she wanted
oh, interesting.
To say.
So you may have swayed the conversation then. That's,
sure,
that's fascinating.
Sure.
I guess Annette is screwed then.
One of the best things about Cannes too, bar none, is just looking at the outfits. I mean, it was summer, it was vacation, it was all these women in these beautiful summer dresses and sandals wandering up and down. It was men in shorts, it was kids with their families coming back from the beach, and it was also beautiful, lovely, balmy outdoor gorgeousness on the Côte d'Azur. You know, it was insane. I mean, I went out to see the Cineum, the new theater. Did you get there? Did you get out there?
I didn't make it out to any of the extra theaters that we could go
to.
That's
where I saw
JFK,
the Oliver Stone movie that nobody watched and nobody cared about because it's like Oliver Stone
more
goes
power
back to JFK. But
I watched a documentary nobody else watched on Oscar Michaud, and I was really happy about that in Cannes Classics. So we all found little slots of time to see things that not everybody else was watching, so we can go home happy.
And then the other thing I was going to say, there's also a lot of movies that deal with the internet, you know, and with media identity and how you're
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.